I'd never given much thought to how I would die. But dying in the place of someone I love seems like a good way to go. I can't bring myself to regret the decisions that brought me face to face with death. They also brought me to Edward.
Welcome to Now Playing Podcast's Twilight Retrospective Series.
You better hold on tight, Spider Monkey.
Hosted by Jacob.
You've done us a great service, Jacob. Thank you.
Stuart.
He's not as perfect as you think.
And Arnie.
I'm surprised he took a break from Jedi training.
But be warned, this episode will contain detailed plot spoilers and strong language.
If we live through this, I'll follow you anywhere, woman.
Now you tell me.
Listener discretion is advised.
The only thing that can hurt me is you.
We hope you enjoy the show.
Come on in, Bella. You won't bite.
Speak for yourself.
Today we're discussing the Twilight Saga Eclipse, starring Kristen Stewart, Robert Pattinson, Taylor Lautner, Bryce Dallas Howard, Billy Burke, and Dakota Fanning, directed by David Slade. This is Arnie, the Now Playing host who has seen the world's largest ketchup bottle. It's in Illinois on Route 66.
And Stewart.
And this is Jacob, the co-host who doesn't own a shirt. I got too many abs to be showing.
Well, it's a heat wave in California. You wouldn't wear it anyway. So we are back for the third Twilight film. I'm starting to notice a pattern in the titles here. Twilight, New Moon, Eclipse.
Mm-hmm. And I mentioned we already covered the book, Jacob and I. To me, that signaled the idea that if Bella was all hung up on one guy, the other one was going to eclipse them in this movie. I thought this would be the movie, the storyline, that suddenly we would all be for Jacob and against Edward. Like there would be a flip. But she's stuck on him. She is not giving him up.
That's kind of what I got from the previous movie. I would have been shocked to see that change here.
And I'm not going to say I was excited to come back to this one because my memory was this was the worst Twilight, that it was just a bunch of flashbacks. If that's what you would have asked before I read that book or watched this again, like I couldn't tell you what the conflict was. After reading that book, though, like it's been my favorite thus far. So I was interested in coming back to see what I missed because there actually is a conflict in this. But all I could remember was flashbacks and backstory.
And there is a new director at the helm that we have three movies in. Keep changing directorial hands. Maybe that's a good thing. Keeps it fresh. David Slade. Anyone have any opinions about him? He made a vampire movie.
Yeah, 30 Days a Night sucks. That's my, like, I was so disappointed with that film.
Disappointment's the perfect word for 30 Days of Night. I remember
hearing
great things about the comic and seeing that movie right when it came out and being like, oh, kind of like Josh Hartnett's whole career.
Yeah, I don't remember much about that movie, but I was a fan of his first movie, Hard Candy.
Oh, yeah, that's good.
Yeah, basically the story of a child that lures a child predator into a trap. It worked. It was like a good sort of torture porn indie.
And Stephanie Meyer was happy with this directorial pick because apparently he directed some of her favorite music videos. So that's what it takes to get on Twilight. Make a good music video for Stephanie Meyer. He's done a bunch with Muse, which I guess that they're in this movie with one of their songs. So I'm guessing those are the ones that she liked the most. But he's done a lot of music videos.
Yeah, this is definitely as much a soundtrack as it is a movie. You could definitely feel that music plays a huge role in all the scenes.
I gotta imagine it was the vampire movie that got him this, though. It's so weird. Like, I get so many conflicting stories when I try to look into, like, why aren't directors coming back? Or no story at all. Like, just no one's saying anything. Apparently, Weitz was doing post-production on New Moon when they decided to start filming this. So they're like, we need to have a new director. Like, because we want to go start rolling cameras now. I also saw that Weitz said, like, it was just too much pressure for him to have this franchise. And he just so worried about disappointing the fans. That could be all lip service, like they just didn't want to bring him back. But I don't know why they can't keep a director. Like, this is bigger than the last one. Like, bigger midnight opening, like huge box office again.
This is around the time that I started to become aware of the phenomenon. You know, the first two movies had come out. I'd seen trailers. I'd paid no attention. It was around this time the screaming fangirls started showing up at places that I'd been going for years. And I was like, oh, I see that the tweens have a fandom now. And it didn't bother me one way or another, but I had no real desire to jump in on it.
Oh, come on. We all hated Twilight. Again, it sounded so dopey. The idea of twinkling vampires is just...
I mean, that's why I was watching these films originally.
Yeah, well, here's the thing. I originally thought, oh, these are going to be horrible films. And then I thought, oh, these are going to be ridiculously bad films. So far, neither has been true. What we've been given is sort of an uncomfortable mixture of a romance, 19th century gothic novel, and, yeah, Lord of the Rings or something like that. And it can't quite find the balance to work for me yet. But maybe with new directorial hands and a firmer sense of how to reduce that sprawling novel into, yeah, what's barely a 2-hour movie. I can't say I was excited for it, but I was curious to see how it might work.
Well, Artie, tell us who's eclipsing who. Give us a plot summary.
Bella has graduated high school, but she's still torn by the choice in front of her. She wants her boyfriend Edward to turn her into a vampire, but while she's ready to make a choice that will change her existence, change her very species, she's not ready to commit to marriage.
I love this. Oh my God.
Is it because she also has feelings for hunky werewolf Jake? Jake thinks so, but he's so hurt that he won't return any of Bella's calls. But while the two men fight for Bella's heart, another person is coming who wants to rip Bella's heart out of her chest. That is the vampire Victoria, seeking revenge for Edward killing her boyfriend James during that first Twilight movie. Victoria is in Seattle creating an army of newborn, flannel-wearing, bloodthirsty vampires.
I hate those. Wannabe grunge band candlebox awful little shits.
With this crew, she plans to kill the entire Cullen family and Bella. The vampire ruling council, called the Volturi, know about Victoria's unsanctioned actions, but let her continue anyway. To protect Bella, the Cullens must team up with the tribe of werewolves of which Jake is a part. They put aside their differences to protect the teen. During this, Bella and Edward hide in the mountains, but when Bella starts to experience hypothermia, Edward's cold body is of no help. It's warm Jake who saves Bella. The next day, Bella gives Jake a passionate kiss, but tells Edward that's not a problem. I love you more than I love Jake. Just remember, cheating husbands. Just tell your wife I love you more than I love the woman I'm cheating on you with, and it's all good. When Victoria's army comes, they're unprepared for defense from both the vampire Cullen family and the ferocious werewolves that tear the newborn vamps limb from limb. Edward kills Victoria, and Jacob is severely injured in the fight, half his bones crushed. He's tended to by Dr. Cullen. Bella has now made her decision. She will marry Edward and become a vampire. Edward and Bella celebrate as credits roll.
And as they start, I think this is a wise decision. Part of the problem I'm having with the books is that the writer, Stephanie Meyer, only wants us to see the story through the vantage point of Bella. And here we get an opening attack that helps us understand what's going on in Seattle. I never could in the book, but here it's pretty clear that vampires are grabbing people off the street and alleys and what have you and turning them. We have this poor guy, an expat of Forks, Washington, who just wanted is he a night out on a town or is he a runaway? I can't figure out what's going on with Riley.
Yeah, they say something later on, like he's just gone missing, so... But we don't see Victoria abducting people. I don't know, she's seducing him all the time. Maybe she seduced him to Seattle.
I think when they say they've gone missing, it means they've been turned into a vampire and just aren't going home again. I don't know why not. It's not like they can't go out in the sunlight.
And it should be said, like, I know this is Victoria here. Maybe, I don't know, Arnie, did you figure this was Victoria attacking Riley?
Yeah, I mean, I was waiting for her the whole last movie to show up and do something. She's been lingering out there. It's about time we finally resolved that storyline, unless it was going to be the arc that carried through all five films.
Different Victoria now. Like, now that it's the big Victoria role, they go with, is Bryce Dallas Howard a draw? To me, I always just assume nepotism. It's always Papa Ron getting her jobs. But the original actress that played Victoria, like, the studio said, oh, scheduling conflict. She couldn't make it, so we had to go with Bryce here. And the original actress is like, no, I didn't have any conflict. I wanted to do this.
Yeah, you obviously are going with a bigger name, but two things. Yes, Bryce Dallas Howard was the star of Lady in the Water and a Lars von Trier movie, but I don't know that she had a whole lot of cachet.
Apparently she turned down this role originally, she says.
Yeah, whatever. All I can say is the shock is Victoria is so little in this movie, you might as well have cast Rachel LaFerve. I mean, like, it really isn't a showpiece for Bryce. As big as they built up this Victoria, she's barely in the film. What we see her disciples a lot more than we see her.
And yet to watch the extras, you'd think she is the biggest thing. It's not a whole lot of time given to Stewart and Pattinson. They get a commentary track where, like, Stewart is really pissed off because Pattinson gets to eat In-N-Out during the recording session and she's stuck in Montreal. But yeah, so much stuff given to Bryce Dallas Howard and how she perfected this voice of Victoria. It's actually very laughable.
That is sad.
And to me, this is just what I would expect because, as you mentioned, Stuart, these movies are mostly told from Bella's point of view. We do break away once in a while, usually to go to Victoria or one of her friends. And I'm talking about the whole trilogy we've watched. It's pretty much been to go to Victoria. So here, I'm not surprised that Bryce Dallas Howard doesn't have a lot of screen time. I'm surprised that they really cared which actress does it, given how little she does.
Exactly.
I'd also say that she doesn't look like how I think of her. And having just seen her in Jurassic World, I don't know, you know, obviously she's 10 years older or whatever, but just dramatically looks different. She was in a Terminator movie the same year as this, and she looked drastically different. So
what Terminator movie came out?
Salvation. She was Christian Bale's wife.
Oh, okay. Yeah, awful one. Yes. Yeah, that's not a movie I revisit ever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, again, it's strange to me that they built up Victoria like she's supposed to be something, but it's not her movie. I will say in the end, when we get back to the meadow, we're getting back to the point. This is a movie about a girl that loves to be the center of attention and debating about which monster she'll date. Or in this case, marry. I do think it is hilarious, as Arnie pointed out. She's ready to make the choice to be a vampire for the rest of her life, but she's so not sure about marriage. Eventually, it does make sense because she'll link it back to her parents got married too soon, right out of high school. But I don't know that it's a reason not to get married to the man you want to be with forever.
Yeah, it is a stereotype with Mormons that they get married young, that they date for like a month and get engaged. So maybe this is on point, but they don't get married so young. They're usually still in high school. Like, they wait for college for that usually.
Yeah, you got to go on sabbatical, right?
But again, I know quite a few people who got married right out of high school or married their high school sweethearts and are still together. I don't think that their statistics and my anecdotal evidence is any better or worse than people who got married in their 30s. So I am fine with this. I just think maybe she doesn't really like this guy.
She just wants to be a vampire. That's all she wants.
Yeah.
I think that's what we'll learn in the end, is that the surprise is that, like, really the turn on is the undead part. And you, maybe it's not about you. Who can say? But it's notable that we begin here. She's reading Robert Frost poetry. Some say the world will be ending in fire. Some say ice. This is contrasting the two loves of her life. That this is the icy boyfriend, the cold one. But there is fire still on the table. And maybe, this movie is the first to acknowledge, maybe, just maybe, she likes fire almost as much as ice.
Does Cullen come from Cold One? This is the first time I actually put that together when they were talking about the Cold Ones. And then I'm like, the Cullens, it kind of sounds the same.
I've never come across anything saying why she picked that name.
Mm-mm. Don't know. I'll tell you who's ended up being a non-factor in these movies. Like, forget the fact that Victoria is not doing much here. I forgot Anna Kendrick and all her school friends. We suddenly cut back to the lunchroom and they're graduating.
Well, that's what's weird. We're like back in school. Like, they're not college age yet. They're still in high school senior year.
Again, if Bella is so worried about judgments and what her friends are going to say if she got married right out of high school, these are the people that would be judging her, right? But barely in this movie, barely a factor. It could actually eliminate them from this movie. There's no reason to return.
There's a lot you could eliminate from this film.
Yeah, I feel they're useless.
I think Anna Kendrick's graduation speech is meant to really spark to Bella that the choice to become a vampire might not be the right choice right now, because as the speech said, now is the time to make mistakes and move on.
But that's an eternal mistake if she ends up regretting it. Like, that is a mistake you don't want to make.
Right, that's why I'm saying she may want to stay human and have these experiences Anna Kendrick's talking about instead of becoming a vampire and not being able to have that experience.
I took it the other way. I took it to her to mean that, like, she doesn't have to do what she's expecting with life. She could make mistakes, like go off with the wrong guy. I don't know. I don't know what that speech is supposed to mean, but I guess you're right. That is the reason why Anna Kendrick is here, to be some kind of voice about making choices now that you are a high school graduate. And keep in mind, I don't know if it's clear in the movies, but in the books, the negotiation was, once I graduate, you're going to turn me. And Edward has now countered by saying, yes, but we must get married first. Is that a ploy for stalling? Or is he really an old-fashioned vampire that can't imagine biting a girl before putting a ring on it?
I mean, that's what they're going to tell us in this. Bella's ready to rip his pants off and he's going to stop her.
Maybe I was just a little bit jaded by Harry Potter, but because the first book was like junior year and the second book was senior year, I thought we were going to have like a year in every book. So when this one started with graduation and we never get to fall, I'm like, okay, so we're going to slow down a little bit and keep Bella at 18, at least until the next movie.
Yeah, everything is about this moment. She's very anxious about getting any older.
Yeah, she can't get older than 17 because then she'll be older than Edward.
Right, yes. I think she already is 18. She had her birthday last movie, so...
No, she sets it August 13th. It's got to be by then, before her birthday.
Yeah, her 19th birthday.
Okay.
Right, yeah, she's an old maid at 19. You know how that's... you're just ruined, kids. Get married before 19. Take it from me, the 48-year-old bachelor. But there is danger, and I do appreciate that. I think this director wants us to always be aware that they cut away. Again, they bring up a lot this name of Riley, and we cut away to violence on the streets of Seattle. We get the sense, unlike in the book, we get the sense that there is real harm coming Bella's way, and Alice has a vision of it, but won't tell her. We see also during these lunchroom scenes that her clairvoyant vampire sister-in-law is freaking out, but not telling her why. And they send her off to vacation with her mom so that this family can go try and hunt Victoria down in the woods by themselves.
Did Edward go on that vacation, or is that him projecting himself again?
No, I think he went.
Yeah, all the rest of the family, they stayed behind to try and get Victoria, and they end up in a werewolf fight. But he is with her when they go to visit the mom in Florida.
It's just so weird, because I know why he has to stay indoors in Florida, but like, you thought they would drop a line so we know why the mom is accepting that, because it's very strange behavior.
Yeah, they're both suntanning, and he's like inside, like, like with the lights off, so... And she's like, oh, you're also in sync. You're always like so connected like magnets. I'm like, oh, really? Because like he's not in the same space as you. But all right. We know why. He'll sparkle. Mom will ask questions. And here's what I can't figure out. We obviously get in this moment. The mom gives her some dumb gift about, I stitched a bunch of old t-shirts together and you have a quilt.
Very proud of this in the extras.
Okay, whatever. The point is, I've given you something that you can give your children. And we see Bella make a face. So vampires can't make kids? That's a thing? They can't make babies?
I've been wondering about that, just because Jacob keeps telling me there's some of the best childbirth scene somewhere in the series. I keep waiting every movie for a pregnancy. So I keep wondering, will she be human when pregnant? Can vampires knock the boots? I don't know.
Well, I think, yeah, the rules they set up is two vampires can't make a baby, at least, because we're going to have newborns, but that just refers to newly turned vampires.
So disappointing. I wanted...
little vampire babies?
Little pampers babies with wings and fangs.
That would be amazing.
It really would.
Maybe the next film we'll get that.
Yeah, get on that, Stephanie Meyer. But anyway, yes. So I'm getting the sense that this choice that we're hearing about being a vampire, this is a real consequence. You're not going to be able to have a baby. You're not going to be able to make a family. You're not even probably going to be able to, quote unquote, like pass off your existence as living. Your parents will have to mourn you. You'll have to say you died.
Yeah, there's this really macabre line that like, oh, in a few decades, everyone you loved will be dead anyway.
Mm-hmm. So she is having to give up a lot by doing this. It's not just a you'll live forever and be pale kind of thing. No kids, your family will mourn and lose you. And yeah, you got to have Edward as a boyfriend. That's a lot.
Okay, you finally listed a negative thing. I'm like, no kids, family gone. Where's the bad sides?
Yeah, Edward. Edward is a real pill here. And I don't think he gets any more charming in this movie. I thought maybe they would write him some scenes where he actually seemed good for her.
I think he's really bad. And Pattinson, like the actor, is bad in this. Like line delivery. I guess you're stuck with these actors. And it's funny because they're talking about, like, with Kristen Stewart, like, she had to have a wig on because she was doing, like, a better movie in between these Twilight ones, Runaways, where she had to look like Joan Jett. So they have this awful wig on her the whole time. But, like, they have other things, but they got to keep these actors for whatever reason. And not good.
I do feel like it was around this time that the actors started hating on the movies and hating on their fans. And
oh, I know Pattinson. Yeah, when we get to the promotional stuff for Breaking Dawn, like, he's like, I don't understand any of this.
And I think all teen idols have a love-hate relationship to the thing that gave them the early success. I mean, it is something embarrassing about it. Hopefully you can get to the place where you accept it for what it is. But this is a reason to be embarrassed. This is, as Jacob said, these are bad performances. It's not just that you're in a silly teen romance about vampires and werewolves. You're really not good in this. You're really not a credible leading man. Like, I'm hating him. When he is tearing up her truck so that she can't go visit her friend, Jake. And again, she only defines him as a friend. That's, again, super controlling, just really unlikable. Like, I don't like his manipulations. This is a bad guy done by a bad performance.
And Pattinson even did a romantic movie in between these two Twilight ones. I guess it's a romance, Remember Me. I don't remember it. I never saw it. Never plan on seeing it. But, like, he was getting roles as a romantic character, but he's not doing it here for whatever reason.
I don't understand anybody being Team Edward or Team Jacob here. Because Edward is, yes, a very bad boyfriend, but I understand that teenagers can get into toxic relationships out of puppy love and what have you. But Jacob, while marginally better, seemingly able to offer her, you know, a human life and things like kids and whatnot, he is lashing out and mean. And
I said this with the book too, where I like Jacob in New Moon, like I really turn against him in this one. And Bella rides off with him, goes to the res, and he like forces himself on her to kiss her. She like breaks her hand punching him, but like he becomes a real jerk in this film.
Yeah, that's uncomfortable. But I mean, just in general, I agree. I don't know who I want her to be with anymore.
Not Mike? Have you moved on from Mike?
Mike's not even in this movie, was he? I think maybe in the background.
He's in it. There's a couple shots of him.
At this point, I'm understanding why Kristen Stewart turned gay. I'm Team Anna Kendrick.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agreed. I don't feel like her options and forks, the forks in the road, get out of town, right? Go to Seattle and see if there's something better awaiting you. But Jacob, okay, so this is the movie where Jacob becomes more involved. At first, the Cullens fight with the werewolves, and then they realize in order to protect Bella from this army building in Seattle, they need to collaborate together. And that means when the vampires go off to feed in the woods, we never see that. If we can see them play baseball, I want to see them take down a bear, right? Like, apparently they're quote-unquote vegetarians, which means they only feast on the blood of forest animals. We're deserved a scene of that, right?
Yeah, well, we get more scenes of them chasing Victoria with the wolves. Like, does that count?
No, that does not count for what I'm saying. I want to see these actors, like, bite into a bear costume and drink blood.
I'll say this. Like, they understood the criticisms of the special effects from that first one, because they did try to redo all these running things. They had these giant treadmills that they would pull that they'd run on, so it looked like they were naturally running instead of, like, bad special effects. They redid the wolves. They got Phil Tippett from, you know, Star Wars fame and all that, got his studio to try to redo these wolves. Like, they knew there was mistakes in the other ones, and they're trying to correct them here.
Sure.
They're not great. They really aren't. They still don't feel like they have a physicality to them. But these aren't super expensive movies. I just wouldn't rely too much on these wolves.
Right. But Bella is with the wolves because the vampires are off feasting, trying to prepare for a battle that's brewing. And this is where Jacob is, yeah, making moves. Not only is he trying to kiss her, but he's trying to sell her on this idea of imprinting. That in werewolf culture, there's love at first sight. And that even though you might love somebody else, and introduces the idea that you can love more than one person, you're only meant for one person. And Jake is hoping that Bella can see that it's him.
Yeah, we'll find out. There's actually a female werewolf. Like, that's like a first with Leia, and Sam, the alpha wolf, was into her, but then he imprinted on Emily and then, you know, domestically assaulted her. But I guess that's besides the point.
Yeah, uncomfortable. Yeah, we try to skip over that stuff. Or maybe not. Again, wouldn't this movie be more interesting if it could get real about those things? You want to talk about domestic violence? You want to talk about the darker nature of things? I didn't realize how puritanical they would be. So all of that stuff is kind of alluded to, but mostly this is about retaining virginity. And this, I mean, Arnie, it's definitely clear in this movie.
She says she's a virgin.
Bella has not been with anyone.
Yep, I didn't see her as the virginal type in that first film. Here, she proves me wrong, or she's lying to her father. I mean, I'm sure every time a girl tells her dad I'm a virgin, it's 100% true, right?
No, I buy it. And to your point, Stuart, I wish they would stray further from the book, because I do like Charlie, her dad, and this relationship, and yeah, explore more things like that. It's a funny scene when he's trying to give her the talk, and she's getting all uncomfortable, and finally blurts out that she's a virgin and he doesn't have to worry. Like, there's good actors in here, but they're not focusing on them because they're side characters.
Yeah, I like the dad. I do like the dad. And he's getting a little bit more to do here. He is talking to the parents of Riley, trying to help find a kid that went missing in another city far away. But what can he do there? But he at least feels a little bit more integral into the plot here. He is reinforcing the idea that when he talks to his daughter, if you ever went missing, it would break my heart. I'd never stop looking for you. That again sends the signal that if Bella does turn and have to go AWOL as a vampire, it could really destroy her dad. Is she willing to do that to that relationship? Something that deserves more screen time than we get.
Yeah. Would she really have to disappear? I mean, again, she could be out in daylight.
I don't know if they make the point very clear in this, and maybe you could tell me, Arnie, if you got it, because I've read the books, so I understand it a little bit more, but because she'd be a newborn, like this army they're going to fight, she'd be too wild. Like, they'd have to at least have her not see any of her loved ones until she learned to control her thirst.
That's true. Yeah, I did get that. But that's 1 year. Tell them you're at college.
Everyone's allowed to rebel a little, right? Experimentation at 19. Rumspringer, whatever you want to call it. Yeah, she could be wild for a year and not have to play dead. But I think that's what they're telling us. Again, I think in lots of little ways, whenever she's talking to her parents, they're goodbyes. She's recognizing that if I'm going to be turned into a vampire, you're not going to be in my life anymore. You can't know that I am a vampire.
And that is what Edward said to get her down there, is this may be your last time to see your mother. And he says, you know, before college, but they're implying you may never see her again. Head to Florida now. Of course, she hasn't even agreed to marry him. He's being very presumptuous.
You don't think she's agreed? I feel like she's accepted it, but she's just being, you know, difficult.
I literally don't think she's accepted it until the last frames of this film.
I mean, you might be right, but to me, it feels like, again, if you're going to spend forever with someone, why would you balk at, well, but I don't want to be married to you? Like, that doesn't make any sense.
No, it doesn't make any sense. This is one of my ultimate problems with this series so far, and this movie in particular, is the character motivations are not only weak, they're dumbfounding.
Yeah, no, I agree. They're either perfectly teenager or, like, yeah, they don't make any sense. I don't know if very accurate or just very frustrating, or maybe both.
Madness or genius.
I do think we're supposed to think her parents getting married too young and having her too young is something that is weighing in on this decision. But in order to really flesh that out, you'd have to make the parents more of a character than they are. Instead, we get a lot of werewolf lore. As she's hanging out with Jacob, he takes her to tribal meetings where, I don't know, there was a lot of exposition in the book.
Yeah, here's the thing. Like, they spend a lot more words with all these backstories in the book. They cut it way down for the film to the point where, like, why even have it? Like, do you really need the third wife foreshadowing set up here to get what Bella does at the end. Like, I feel like you could cut, I mean, we'll talk about the other backstories, but I feel like they cut them down so much. Like, yeah, they're kind of pointless in this film.
Yeah, I don't connect that when Bella draws her own blood to draw Victoria away from Edward, that she was inspired by the story of Taja Aki.
It's so quick, the story in this.
Yeah, they needed to do more in juxtaposing those, because I don't think that's clear that she was inspired by it. Nor do I think you even understand who these characters are. All I would get watching this montage is one day there were werewolves and one day there were vampires and they don't like each other. And a tribal leader's wife killed herself to allow her husband to kill a vampire.
Yeah, that's pretty much what I got out of it as well. And yeah, I just think it is foreshadowing the end scene of this.
I also thought it might be foreshadowing the next one, the book I haven't read, Breaking Dawn. I feel like Bella might have to make more. I don't know if she'll lose her life. I don't know how that will work, but I figured there's something in this story that is going to have resonance in the conclusion. Could be wrong.
Oh boy, I can't wait to talk about that book with you then.
Okay. All right. Good. Well, we'll do that in a bit. But for now, what is eclipsing here? What is changing? Eventually, we're going to find out that Alice has a vision that, no shit, everyone in Seattle, the 20 street bums that have been turned, including a little girl named Bree Tanner, are going to come down to Forks and get Bella.
Yeah, the whole thing is Victoria has had to work through Riley, so Victoria doesn't know what the plans are. That way Alice can't track anything because she doesn't know to track Riley's thoughts. But yeah, eventually she figures it all out and they start prepping for war.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how hard it would be to deduce something. Like, you sense badness and there's serial killing in Seattle and there's this chick named Victoria that's been mad about you killing her boyfriend for a while now. Yeah, no shit, she's building an army to get you.
And, you know, we'll see Riley take something from Bella's room and they smell his scent. Like, they know something's going on.
Yeah. I feel like it would have been nice to have more. There is more in the movie than there was in the book, but it would be nice to have more scenes to give to Bryce Dallas Howard to make her feel like she's truly important here and to understand her relationship with Riley.
To your point, Stuart, there's this scene where you could see Riley super frustrated because these newborns are like just attacking everyone. And he's trying to get them to stop drinking blood. And it's kind of got some dark humor, but it's so quick. And does this even play at all? Or because it feels like they're just moving super fast.
I don't understand the machinations of the middle third of this movie, because when the Cullens start trying to protect Bella but not tell her, and then we get a lot more of the vampire lore about newborns and how Jasper had that hunger and everything, I'm following it, but yet when Bella ends up on a mountain or ends up staying over at Edward's place, I'm not quite sure how this is more protective because there haven't been any direct attacks.
Well, yeah, they have to do this whole thing where Jacob walks Bella around to cover up her scent with his dog scent. Like, this feels like a whole lot of work. Like, anytime she wants to go somewhere, Jacob's got to carry her.
Yeah, that's, again, a very bizarre notion that this love triangle is being permitted by Edward because the suitor smells like a dog and thus can protect Bella's odor from other vampires. Like, that this is all about odor. It's just,
it's all about body odor.
Yeah, I just it's unappetizing to me and it feels like the wrong thing to emphasize, but it's what they're going with and it's a reason to keep Edward and Jacob at each other. Honestly, I thought this would be the whole movie. I thought this whole series would be about a vampire and a werewolf at each other's throats because they both want the same girl. But it's really only been this movie and only in a few scenes where we really get to see the hatred and resentment between them. You have to admit I'm hotter than you and all the one-upsmanship.
Oh, especially once we get to that tent, but we'll get there.
For what it's worth, Jake seems a lot hotter because he's walking around with no shirt on. And I think he has an 8-pack going on in those abs, not just a 6-pack. I think there's 2 extra that popped out there.
It's so funny because the actor is like 5'9". He's supposed to be 7 foot at this point, but I guess he's packing on that muscle to make up for it.
Yeah, but he's the fire and Edward's the ice. It's just about what you're looking for. Yeah, obviously, Edward is not the beefcake that Jacob is, but you're supposed to believe that he's more like those Calvin Klein heroin model kind of types. Like, it's a different aesthetic.
we've had another rivalry throughout these movies with Rosalie and Bella. And again, in the book, I felt it was resolved. I don't know. Like, this backstory is so quick and they only imply certain things. Like, they got to keep it PG-13 here, I guess.
Yeah, this was a little bit awkward. I felt like there was something implied there that the movie didn't necessarily want to show.
Gang rape.
I did a double take on that one, I'll admit. I was like, I'm a little bored by all these vampire backstories. They don't seem to have a whole lot of relevance to the story or the plot. They're not foreshadowing all that much. But this one was the one that got my attention the most.
Yeah, in the book, it's to tell you that she really loved being a human, and that for her, being a vampire is lesser. What I do wish they did in this film, because they do, I cut a lot of that backstory. I do love, like, how she's hunting down everyone in that wedding dress, and I wish we just had a whole sequence of that. Like, that felt fun.
I agree. If you're going to have flashbacks, at least make them feel like real movie moments. Like, that would be fun to see. And maybe fun isn't what they're going for. Again, I think these are largely played straight, so we're not supposed to be laughing, but this movie series would be on better footing if I were laughing and encouraged to laugh at it a little bit more. A little more tongue-in-cheek would be fun. I think the other thing to emphasize here, I agree with you, Jacob, we realize that Rosalie, part of her anger is that Bella still has the opportunity to stay human. And even though she thinks she has a miserable life of a human is better than the perfect life of a vampire to Rosalie. What I heard, this helped me understand this in a way I didn't hear it in the book. It's because Rosalie wanted babies. She talks about having grandbabies on a porch. And it again sells the idea that if you want children, vampire life is not for you.
And if you go back to the first book, we never got this flashback. Maybe we will in the last film. But with Esme, the mom of the Cullen clan, like, that was her thing. She lost a baby and threw herself off a cliff to kill herself, and then Carlisle saved her. So, like, yeah, there does seem to be this idea of, yeah, you don't want to give up your breeding. You got to be able to be barefoot and pregnant.
The Cullen family is a collection of people. If you want children, you have to basically turn people and say that they're your kids. Jasper, Emmett, Edward, Rosalie are all people that are not in Carlisle's bloodline. He made them his children by taking away their blood and maybe their soul. So again, a different take on childhood, a different idea about what vampire love is. Would it make it less attractive? Bella, I wish I saw her struggle more. I don't know whether it's Kristen Stewart's performance or the writing, but I never really see her wrestling with this decision. I don't even feel like the marriage thing is a real conflict for her.
Yeah, I don't think it's written for them to struggle.
She's stalling because I believe she's a tease that is afraid to give up what has been so desirable. Once she gets turned from a human to a vampire, she won't stink good anymore. She won't have that virgin waft.
It would help if I knew she wanted kids, you know, but she's an only child. It's not like she has a younger sibling and she's talked about or can talk about wanting kids of her own based upon some experience. And so I'm just left, like, wondering if she even cares about this fantasy of sitting on a porch with grandkids, realizing that that includes being old and having arthritis.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's her thing. She's obsessed with age. She does not want to get old for whatever reason.
It sucks. Don't do it. Turn into a vampire.
It does. There's a lot of pain.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it's at this point, like, we start getting some training montages as we get this plan to go to war, and we get another backstory. We find out all about Jasper, or do we? Like, again, they cut so much out. Here's the frustrating thing with the novels is, like, there's actually a lot of cool ideas that could just spawn their own stories, and nothing ever really gets to marinate and come to fruition. But, like, there's a lot of neat ideas with the Civil War, and vampires are having their own Civil War that Jasper gets caught up in. Here, it's all very truncated.
Yeah, I don't think that you understand a really crucial concept here. Yeah, he was a Civil War fighter.
Yeah, he was on the South side, right? I mean, that's what I got from him being Texan.
A Confederate. Yes, he's in Galveston, Texas. Yep.
Yes. But more importantly, when he hooked up with a vampire woman, they decided to fight dirty and use newborns. That they would go around and bite people. She would create them. He would have to put them down after a year. But those newborns were so wild and strong that they would become a way of, well, I mean, they didn't win the Civil War. I don't know what war they're fighting, but they took out covens.
Well, they were having a different civil war.
Yeah, they were fighting vampire covens in Mexico. And again, why wouldn't you want to spend 10 minutes on that? Why wouldn't you give a few good scenes for Jasper so that he becomes something more than a background character and a haircut?
I watched the theatrical cut of this because I didn't recommend that first Twilight film, and I watched the extended cut.
It doesn't matter, Artie. You're getting like 4 more minutes.
Okay, well, I felt like the shorter cut probably helped. Is any of the stuff you guys are saying expanded upon in the longer cut?
No, here's the weird thing. Like, I guess this is the redheaded stepchild of the Twilight films. Look, I got the big old Twilight Forever box set. Every movie has a second disc of bonus features. Like, I got to watch 4 different discs for Breaking Dawn when we get there because it's split up into 2 movies. Eclipse, no second disc, barely any. It has like 1 making of documentary, has a hilarious commentary track with Pattinson and Stewart, and then another one with the producer and Stephanie Meyer, where you get to learn she is totally horny for Charlie. Like, that's about the extent of that. But, like, they don't get a lot of extras on this. It feels like, yeah, this one we got to get through to get to the last one.
And you know what? It is a middle chapter. I think all middle books in a saga struggle with this. They don't have the beginning and they don't have the end. So it is kind of hard to find something to get people excited about. Victoria ain't it. That's all I can say. If they wanted me to care that Victoria is coming, don't care. Now, if you want to tell me the Volturi is involved, I think that's a better hook. We met them last movie. There's this Italian, creepy, cruel, and sadistic vampire. I don't know what you want to call them, but a Law and Order vampire cult. And they are starting to become concerned that all of this killing in Seattle is becoming too public in the human world and that they're going to have to get involved.
Yeah, and this is the stuff I did like in the book because we're going to get an actual battle. It's not like, let's just get to Italy before Edward steps into the sun. Like, it felt like, yeah, there's some exciting action here. And yeah, when you get the Volturi and they're checking things out, like, what is their plan? They seem to always be trying to manipulate things. It's just as, like, an underworld action film. Like, this could have been one, but I guess because it's a teen romance, they don't want to go there. That's why I was excited to come back to this one, because I didn't remember any of the gangs or the big fight at the end, and I wanted to see how they did that, because that entertained me in the book. But yeah, the Volturi showing up, or the Volturi guard, we got to be accurate for the Twihards. They'll get angry at us. Yeah, Dakota Fanning is back. These are the guards, and they're going to report back to Aro.
Yes, Michael Sheen is not here.
Doesn't show up. Yeah, the film is worse for it.
Yeah, Dakota Fanning is, yes, preening and watching the things build and brew in Seattle. The Cullens aren't sure, they're not behind it, but I think when you cut away to Seattle, it's pretty clear that the Volturi are just, you know, spectators.
They're not stopping it, they're allowing it, but they're not the ones creating vampires.
Right, yeah. So it sort of takes away the intrigue. So, yeah, what does all this build to? A big battle in the forest, and one in which Bella is being, quote-unquote, protected from, which means we got her in a tent instead of watching the fight go down. That's bizarre.
Yeah, a threesome in a tent during a snowstorm. Like, this stuff cracked me up in the book. Here, they hit a lot of the high points, like where Edward reads Jacob's dirty thoughts. But look, Mormons don't practice polygamy anymore, but I do feel like Stephanie Meyer has got a real thing for polyandry here. Like, Jacob could be my best friend. I can make out with him, and it's a different love than I have for you, Edward. I could snuggle with him to stay warm in the sleeping bag. It's a different kind of love. It's not a threat.
Fire and ice.
Like, Edward, he's a simp. Like, I just got to say it. Like, people, like, in a relationship, you got to have passion. And Edward is just so like, okay, yeah, you got to snuggle with this dude to keep warm. I guess I just got to go with it.
I'd be fine with the snuggling bit. It's the kiss after. I mean, the snuggling, I don't know why they took her to the top of a damn mountain, but...
To hide her?
Yeah. There's a lot of places to hide where you don't need the oiled shirtless dude to cuddle you to survive.
Take her back to Florida, right? You could take her to warm places. Yeah, go to the Middle East and you do not want a werewolf cuddling up with you. You would like something cool or curling up with you at all times. There are advantages to being a cold one that Edward is not playing to.
But you know what? If somebody had to snuggle my wife for body heat and it was completely platonic, Would I be 100% happy? No.
If he was acting like Jacob is, like making innuendo, like being a little too into it.
Here's the problem. Edward can't read Bella's thoughts. So when Jacob is saying she loves me as much as she loves you, he can't deny it. Now, I can look at the performances and say she's definitely not into the werewolf in the same way as the vampire. But again, should we be thinking that? It feels like we should believe that that's a possibility.
But what about kiss the next day when Jake is going off and she tells him to kiss her? Earlier, he kissed her. She punched him and broke her own hand.
He forced a kiss, and now she asked for one. Yeah.
Yeah, it's not out of romance. She wants him to stay. Like, he's getting ready to go off to fight because he's got to follow orders because he's not the alpha dog. And she doesn't want him to get hurt. Like, she does, like, care about him, like, as a really good friend. And so, yeah, she's like, okay, you can kiss me now, like, to try to get him to stay.
I don't want to lose you is not the same thing as I love you. I'm just going to put it that way. She doesn't want to lose Jacob.
I've never had a girl let me kiss her like that because she didn't want to lose me, though.
Yeah, she's saying he's important, but she's not saying that she wants him. And again, poor Jacob believes he has a chance. I don't have that future in mind for him. I would be stunned if Breaking Dawn ends with Bella and Jacob. He may not even live to see it. We'll see in this big battle, he gets his rib crushed. We're told that these newborn vampires have strength greater than any creature that's fighting on the other side. Proof to that is Jacob gets his ass handed to him.
After the battle's over, it's just like a stray vampire jumps up and crushes him.
You can hurt werewolves with things other than silver bullets? You can crush their bones?
Yeah, but they're like Wolverine. They have a healing factor, but his bones were crushed so bad, I guess they couldn't set them properly so they could heal properly, so he's in a lot of pain.
Time to get a shirt, Jacob. Those abs, they're not going to look right.
But yeah, this whole final battle, like, I wanted so much more. Like, we get a little fight in a field between some vampires and werewolves. And then, yeah, Edward versus Victoria, like, get some stunt actors, get some choreography here. Like, it's not real thrilling.
Buffy the Vampire Slayer did it better on TV. You know what I'm saying? It's like, this was some pretty poor action with all of the back and forth, and there's no suspense in this for me. I know who's won ahead of time, but the fact that so little time was spent with Victoria anyway, the best thing here are the wolves just ripping vampire newborns apart. That's the only enjoyable part of this whole fight.
Yeah, we get some limbs, some arms ripped off, so a few beheadings. There's no blood. It's very PG-13.
Yeah, this was a question we had. Do vampires have blood in their veins? And this movie answers it. They break like porcelain.
Yeah, they're like big crystals is how they describe them in the extras.
Mm-hmm.
Why do they break? Is it because they have diamond skin? Is it because it was cold in the mountains and they're like frozen?
No, it's because they have their cells have turned into like crystals.
Yeah.
So they have this rock-like structure.
Calcified is the way that it feels like to me.
Yeah.
Okay, I had no clue why they were breaking apart. I was very confused by that.
Yeah, you see, I believe it's Sam, who's a wolf, like, bite off Riley's hand, and it's kind of weird looking, the effects.
Yeah, I just thought they were frozen, like having an icicle.
You know what? I go with it. If it's a PG-13 movie and you know that the MPA has a problem with blood, then this is probably a smart way to do it. It at least feels violent that Victoria gets beheaded, that people lose limbs. I mean, I accept it on its premise for action, but let's face it, this is not an action series. This is not an epic that has a love story. This is about a love story that occasionally panders to the action audience by giving them scenes like this.
Yeah, this is a moment where I wish it was a little more underworld, where we had some real choreography and battles going on. Because I like this stuff in the book. Like, I'm like, wow, we're finally getting some real action going on. And that's what one of the reasons I was looking forward to coming back to this film, because I didn't even remember this stuff. And, well, that's because it's not very memorable.
I don't know that it was all that much in the book either. I mean, the book was, again, more about Bella's choices than anybody having an amazing fight.
Agreed. But I imagine this stuff as they're describing it, like, it was way better in my head.
Okay, truly. I would want for better than what I'm getting. I would say this. Yes, it would be terrible to turn Twilight into Underworld, but it could go a little bit more into that direction and be better for it.
Yeah. And this is something with all the books, like nothing happens to the last 100 pages. And I feel like, again, listening to the extras, they are afraid, or they say they really want to respect Stephenie Meyer's vision and what the fans like. But I feel like you got to adapt this. You can't just do it page for page, because it's, yeah, boring prose. Like, adapt this, make it exciting, put the action in there where you're needed, and I think this would be a recommendable film.
So, Arnie, I'm curious, what's your takeaway on Brie Tanner?
I was like, oh, there's this little girl there. I got that because she was very young, the Cullens didn't want to kill her, she didn't engage in the fight, and then the Volturi show up, and they're like, kill her, and I'm like, why? Who? I just didn't understand her point in this at all.
Yeah, she's supposed to be 15, and yeah, Carlisle wants to adopt her. He thinks, you know, he could bring her into the family.
Right. Again, I think it's the selling point in this movie. This is the selling point for you can't really have kids when you're a vampire, because this is the way that they're going to add to their members. And most vampire covens, they don't have more than 3 or 4 people because they don't practice the vegetarianism. They are ultimately get too many vampires in a room and they attack one another. But the Cullens have been able to have 5 children, and they want to have the 6th one here, but the Volturi say no for whatever reason.
She broke the rules and they got to stick with the rules.
Yeah, I take it as Dakota Fanning is a sadist.
Well, we see her use her power, yeah.
Yeah, she has this power to hurt and like just, you know, like look at you and you just double over in pain. She likes that. She likes seeing this 15-year-old girl in pain. We're spared it, but yeah, one of her guard comes and finishes her off. It's also said, this was all coming from things that Stephenie Meyer wrote in the book, in the preface for a prequel novel, is that Brie Tanner is to represent to Bella sort of a cautionary tale about becoming a vampire. This is the first newborn that Bella has ever seen. This is essentially herself, what she's going to become. And to see her murdered in this way should make the life unattractive. It's a just say no commercial to vampirism.
Which they could get that point across if they rewrote this whole film. Like, I don't know, maybe that comes across to you, Arnie. I've read the books and that doesn't come across to me in the film.
Did not come across to me.
Yeah, I don't think it's clearly there. I don't think it's there in the ways that are impactful emotionally. And I don't think that I care that Bella is picking a wedding date and that we're going to presumably get a vampire wedding next movie.
Stuart, you're not fascinated by the wedding ring, how they made sure it matched the description in the book. Like, that is the stuff they care about because they're so afraid of the fans. Like, this wedding ring, like, just design after design. And they finally had to bring in Stephenie Meyer to get it right.
No, I think, again, appeasing these fans may be what got them the money, but I'm not one of these fans. So the more you can de-emphasize some of the romance, I'm not saying get rid of it. I think you need it. I mean, yeah. I do think that this is about a girl making choices about what she wants for her future. But I think that that storyline should be more marginalized so that we can care more about the supporting characters. I think that it has been about too much, certainly in the books and even in these movies, it's too much about Edward and Bella. And I would have liked to have met and spent more time with Rosalie and Jasper and poor Emmett, who, again, has no backstory even.
No backstory, yeah. I can't believe I'm going to say this. I do wish these were a little bit more underworld. Like, yeah, you could have this subplot with romance between Edward and Bella and Jacob. Like, that could be a thing on the side. But what has attracted me, what I've liked about what I've read in the books is all the hints of, like, lore and backstory and, like, interesting ideas. I'm not going to deny Stephenie Meyer doesn't come up with some interesting ideas. She just never executes on them. Like, I want this rewritten to explore all those great ideas she had instead of doing this romance story the whole time.
Yeah, it's too much of the same thing, and it's not done well because the actors themselves don't buy it. But yes, Edward has gotten her a diamond, and well, I don't think she got rid of Jacob's homemade werewolf bracelet either.
Nope, she still has that.
Which one will she wear down the aisle? Who will she match up with? Again, they're acting like this is a choice, but I think it's a foregone conclusion.
Yeah, this movie ended and nothing had changed. At the end of the last movie, she said to Edward, turn me into a vampire, and Edward said, if you marry me. And the fact that there was any shock or hesitation at all surprised me.
Well, Arnie, that was unique to that movie. Like, they never bring up marriage in that second book, so...
Okay.
So they made it more repetitive for these movies for some reason.
Yeah, because at the end of this movie, now she said yes. Everything else could be cut out of this. Literally everything could be cut. We could just cut straight to yes, and that's the end of it. I mean, does anything in this film matter? I know it's not all that interesting to me, so does it matter?
I mean, it resolves the Victoria storyline.
It's given her lots of reasons, from the valedictorian speech to Brie Tanner to all the mentions of the fact that you're not going to have kids. There's lots of reasons to say no to marriage and no to the vampire way of life. But for whatever reason, Bella seems to be able to ignore all of them without any of it weighing on her head. Again, I don't even get the sense that it's hard for her.
That's what I'm saying, that nothing here matters. It's not like at the end, any of these arguments persuaded her at all or even seemed to matter. It's just, this movie feels like a filler episode. This whole thing feels like wasting my time.
Yeah,
it is. Well, again, it's not wasting your time if you love what you're getting, but it's definitely lingering.
And she did not have, like, a full saga in mind when she got that first book published. Like, she had to make up stuff, and this does feel like treading water. Because when she was writing it, she went straight to Breaking Dawn. Like, she thought that would be the sequel, and then she got a 4-book deal and had to come up with extra stuff.
Yeah, to be clear, she wrote the first book, the 4th book, and then came up with the other two in the middle. So it is filler. By that very definition, she had to fill it out to complete her book contract.
Well, let's fulfill our fiduciary contract with our donors. Jacob Stewart, do you recommend Eclipse? Jacob.
My memory was this was the worst. It was boring. I didn't even remember there was a big battle at the end of this one. And then I read that book and I got excited because, yeah, there's some neat things here. But this movie adapts them all wrong. Like, either cut these flashbacks out all the way or add more there to where it really builds up the themes of this film. Maybe even have some themes for this film. Like, again, a lot of ideas. I don't know what the theme is. I don't know what the struggles are for Bella. You know, does she worry about not being able to have kids? Does she worry about never seeing Charlie or Renee again? I don't know. Like, this film really needed to have a better adaptation. It's pretty accurate to that novel, and yet they just brought in all the boring stuff. Like, it's a real failure. And that's the biggest thing. Like, it is boring. I'm not laughing at it ever like I have with the other two. I'm kind of just waiting for it to end, why people stand around and talk. Like, let's get to that big fight at the end. And then that's boring too. So yeah, stay away from this one. Not recommend.
Stewart.
You know, here's the difference, is Jacob is much higher on the book than I am. I would say that this is a decent reduction of an overlong book that needed a lot of editing. They found the stuff that is most interesting and they picked it out. But yeah, they didn't turn it into a movie. That's what I was hoping to see, is that it's one thing to tell us backstory. It's another thing for us to like the characters because we've followed them on their journey. And yeah, this was the movie to tell us that Rosalie mattered, that Jasper mattered, that other characters mattered other than Edward, Jacob, and Bella. And on that point, you can tell the disinterest, whether it's pressure coming from the studio or what the Twihard fans want. Whatever it is, they will not reduce the love story so that the other characters are allowed to breathe and grow and be likable, to the detriment of this movie. And so it is kind of boring. And I think the character that is most underserved is Bryce Dallas Howard. Because again, if you were going to say this mattered at all, it was because it was the showdown between Bella and Victoria. And who the hell is Victoria? And why does it matter that she's dead now? It doesn't. And that's too bad. And I do think that Bryce Dallas Howard is a big enough actress that she could have had a lot of fun in this part if they'd let her. But as it were, it is a non-event. I mean, I won't say that staring into this movie is as hazardous as staring into an actual eclipse. Like, you know, you'll go blind if you do that with a solar eclipse. You're not going to go blind watching this movie. In some ways, I wish it was more terrible and trashy. But it is just vaguely unsatisfying. And I don't know. I was thinking I'd be laughing a whole lot more if I wasn't into it. But I just kind of shrug.
3 for 3 on complete ambivalence of this dull film. I mean, I watched it, and during the first part, I kind of had the feeling I've had with all these Twilight films of, this isn't bad. This isn't bad cinema.
Mm-hmm. And that's disappointing. I thought it would be.
But I'd be fine with the weak recommendable movie. And during the opening where we get to see the killing in Seattle, the high school graduation speech, it feels like things are moving. The trip to Florida comes very fast in this movie. I mean, we're talking first 15 minutes, we've gone to Florida and come back. And so during that period, and the reuniting with Jacob, and the threat of Victoria, it felt like things were going to happen. And then around the 30-minute mark, it just becomes a series of flashbacks and lectures to Bella that aren't interesting. The best stuff here is the Victoria stuff, but as has been said multiple times in this podcast, because we're primarily being told everything from Bella's point of view, we don't get enough Victoria to make that a central thrust, a central plot. Much like the first film with Victoria and her two friends, they were there and they became all of the focus after the baseball game, but for the majority of the movie, they were just in the background as they are here. In the end, like I said, nothing changed, and you could literally skip this movie. It's a not recommend.
Yeah, I think we need to take a break from Twilight.
Please?
We're getting to the good ones, though, guys! I promise!
I've heard this promise three times.
I agree. Jacob, you might have overpromised.
No. I said we're treading water till Breaking Dawn.
All right. You're telling me that the most salacious, outrageous, campiest stuff is yet to come.
They go places I cannot believe they go in the next films.
Okay. Well, before we go to those places, we're going to go to Thor. That movie is opening up this weekend. We'll have it on our main feed on Tuesday. And because we're doing all things Thor, we decided to go with a non-Marvel Thor movie that one of our patrons has picked for July, Adventures in Babysitting.
I was arguing we needed to do this when we started the whole Marvel retrospective. Definitely a Thor film.
Before Taika Waititi, I might have even said the best Thor film.
Absolutely the best Thor film before then.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Wow. I mean, I think I might have seen this movie, but I'm not sure.
Yeah, this one was on constant play when I was a kid. Like, I could probably do the review without watching it.
I absolutely could. There's some cringe moments for sure, but...
Singing some blues. Are you going to sing for us, Arnie? No one gets out of this podcast without singing the blues.
I could be wrong, but I'm getting this movie mixed up with Ferris Bueller's Day Off, but I feel like it's Ferris Bueller's Day Off with Elizabeth Shue and children, right?
Yeah, kind of, sorta.
Yeah, you're not wrong.
Okay. And instead of singing the Beatles on a float, they do end up in a blues club.
Yes.
Okay, yes. I saw this movie. I don't know how much I'll remember, but we're covering it next week. Next Friday.
This Disney movie about chasing a playboy, yes.
Okay.
Nobody is allowed to watch the Disney Plus cut. It is censored.
That's the only thing I can watch.
You're going to have to rent a video, Stuart. It is censored.
Yeah, I'm sure they cut all that stuff out.
You're going to have to head down to a video store or a library.
Oh, all right. Amazon Prime, here I come.
So, Jacob, Stuart, thank you for joining me. Donors, thank you for sticking out the silver level with us. We'll be back in a couple weeks, returning to Twilight. Until then, gotta go. Got a vampire to kill.
This is the last time you'll ever see me. I won't come back. And you can go on with your life without any interference from me. It'll be like I never existed, I promise. I'm just sorry I let this go on for so long.
Once again, thank you for supporting Now Playing.
I can read every mind in this room. Money. Sex. Money. Sex. Cat.
It's your support that keeps Now Playing operating.
I'm never gonna get enough of this. We don't get tired. We don't have to rest or catch our breath or eat. I mean, how are we gonna stop?
We hope you enjoyed the show.
I'm glad I amuse you.
Go to nowplayingpodcast.com each week to hear our hosts review the original novels on which these movies are based.
You're not really into this, are you?
I actually really just want to go to this bookstore.
Help us spread the word about this show by leaving a 5-star review on Stitcher, Podbean, iTunes, or your podcast store of choice.
But I can't help myself. You are so mouth-watering.
Now Playing Podcast is produced by Arnie Carvalho.
I'm down with the kids.
Oh yeah, dude. You're the bomb.
Associate produced by Jason Latham.
I like my own personal brand of heroin.
Now Playing is edited by Heath, Santiago, and Arnie.
Bella, they're not even alive. It makes me sick. Better you really be dead than one of them.
Now Playing credits read by Brock.
Everything about me invites you in. My voice, my face, even my smell.
The opinions expressed in this podcast are those of the individual hosts and may not reflect the views of Venganza Media Incorporated.
Can't trust vampires. Trust me.
Venganza Media Incorporated is not affiliated with, and this podcast has not been prepared, approved, or licensed by any entity that created the film analyzed herein.
I have to report a crime. The Collins. They've done something terrible.
All movie clips and music included in this podcast are the intellectual property of their respective copyright holders. They are included here for the purpose of review and no infringement is intended.
Oh, you see, there's no law broken here.
Agreed. But does it then follow that there is no danger?
Now Playing Podcast is an exclusive trademark of and may not be used without the express written permission of Venganza Media Incorporated.
I have never met anyone more prone to life-threatening idiocy.
Now Playing is a Venganza Media production, copyright 2022, and no part of this show may be reproduced, repurposed, or redistributed without the written permission of Venganza Media Incorporated. All rights reserved.
My time as a human was over. But I never felt more alive.
Starring Kristen Stewart, Robert Pattinson, Taylor Lautner, Bryce Dallas Howard, Billy Burke, and Dakota Fanning, directed by David Slade.
How could you forget about Boo Boo Stewart? He played Seth. I just like the name Boo Boo Stewart.
Well, that is now your nickname.
Shit.
This is Arnie, the Now Playing host, who has seen the world's largest ketchup bottle. It's in Illinois on Route 66.
And Stewart.
Boo Boo Stewart.